And so I thought, oh, I would reach out to the state treasurer, give them a call, and see what we could do with more local Wisconsin investments, because that's what their job is as the chief financial officer. Call the state treasurer, don't return my call. Call them again, don't return my call. And I come to find out it's because they're trying to get rid of the state treasurer's office.
As a progressive in rural America, have you ever banged your head against the wall in disbelief at the antiquated and even harmful direction that conservative elected officials are leading your community and state? You're not alone. Our guest today on the Three Rural White Guys podcast is Sarah Godlewski. Sorry, Wisconsin State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski, who will share with us how she dealt with backward leadership in her home state and organized it to make it better, eventually leading to her running for statewide office and winning. Her next step, running for U.S. Senate to unseat famed Trumpian and conspiracy theorist Ron Johnson. This is the Three Rural White Guys podcast. Yes, we are just three rural white guys drinking beer in our garage. Kellen Gracie regularly chases his three-year-old kid around the house trying to get him to put clothes on. He is also a university poli-sci professor and a data scientist with GoDaddy. Jacob Dodds spends most of his time shuttling kids to youth sporting events. He also happens to be a leading expert in rural healthcare and emergency services. I'm Mike Heaton. I just converted my garage into a podcast studio. The drywall looks pretty crappy. I'm also a recovering lobbyist, nonprofit executive, and social entrepreneur. We are the Three Rural White Guys podcast. Our goal? To help rural progressives make rural progressive. We are so excited to have State Treasurer of Wisconsin and potentially future U.S. Senator, current candidate for U.S. Senate for the Democratic Party in the state of Wisconsin, Sarah Godlewski. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thanks for having me. It's always good to see my neighbors to the west as you look over and see how great Wisconsin is. We're just now right here and talking about it. Talk about it.
You've been thoroughly kicking our ass in football for the last however many years, unfortunately. It's not been pretty.
More than football, Mike. Let's just be honest.
We can talk wrestling if you want. That's about all we got is like wrestling. It's bad. We're really excited to have you on. And it's not really random. I actually am very honored to know you personally, Sarah, from your time with UNICEF. And I was hoping, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to where you're at now? How you got here? How did you end up back home in Wisconsin? How did you end up state treasurer? You were one of those rebound Midwesterners that left and came back like a lot of us.
A comeback kid, I think, as we like to call it too. Nice. Yes, it is great to be here. And look, like I'm a fifth generation Wisconsinite. I took some time outside of the state, but it was never about if I would come back. It was really when. I worked at the Pentagon for 8 years. And so it time to head on back. And I think on that journey had a unique opportunity actually to do some microfinancing work. And that also corresponded with my time at UNICEF and just really saw how when you empower communities, especially with access to capital, it completely transforms them. And so that led to co-founding an impact investment firm where we're investing in green energy and women and minorities and affordable healthcare. And in doing that work, you guys probably won't find this shocking, I came across this interesting fact where the amount of money Silicon Valley gets in one day is what Wisconsin gets in an entire year when it comes to our startup and small business world. And I'm like, that's crazy, because we know in Wisconsin, our economy runs on Main Street, not on Wall Street. And so I thought, oh, I would reach out to the state treasurer, give them a call and see what we could do with more local Wisconsin investments, because that's what their job is as the chief financial officer. Call the state treasurer, don't return my call. Call them again, don't return my call. And I come to find out it's because they're trying to get rid of the state treasurer's office. Who needs checks and balances in government? Like, overrated, you know? Let's just give all of our financial responsibilities to the governor. No big deal. That's what they were trying to do. And I just thought that was wrong. And found myself leading a constitutional amendment committee to save our state treasurer. And we won with 63% of the vote. So Wisconsinites said, heck no, we're not losing the state treasurer. So then really the question was, all right, who's going to run for this office? And as my grandma would say, who was the first, one of the first group of women in World War II, she said, ask for forgiveness, not for permission. So I just threw my hat in and ran for state treasurer. And look, meeting people where they are, traveling the state. And I took actually more of the vote share in a midterm election than the governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general. So it has been a wild couple of years as state treasurer. And quite frankly, seeing the gridlock in Washington and the gridlock here in our state legislature is really what inspired me to run for the U.S. Senate, because I know Wisconsin deserves better than our current federal senator with Ron Johnson, who would rather just talk about conspiracy theories and junk science than actually helping working families. So here we are.
He was one of the most vocal against making Juneteenth a federal holiday, if I read that right. Originally, he was basing it on finance, but he was one of the reasons it never got through until recently when he gave up his argument against it. Is that right?
Yeah, they were going to be able to pass it with unanimous consent. So we're saying like the Ted Cruz's, the Josh Hawley's of the world were like, all right, let's just pass this. And Ron Johnson's, no. And they're like, what's the deal? And he like, we're all for this. It's a part of our history. Let's recognize it for what it is. And he finally had to back down because everybody was on the train except for him. So
sure.
Not one of our finest Wisconsin moments, Mike. I will say that.
Yeah, I can tell. I'm going to throw it over the other guys here in a second, but because this is related, I have a quick story and question for you. I was on my way. I went down to Texas and dropped my kid off in for camp yesterday and drove back today. I literally just got back like an hour ago, and I've been on the road for like nonstop. And somewhere in the middle of Missouri, we had to stop for my last gas up. So I stopped at this town called Holt Summit. It's dead center in the middle of Missouri. It's a small rural town, has a Casey's, you know, gas station. Pulled over, started filling up the gas tank, and this gal pulls up into to the gas thing next to me and starts filling up her gas tank. And she looks like she's maybe 65, 70, sort of has that Midwestern look to her, the short perm with the glasses and a little bit color in her hair. But definitely from the area. You could Missouri plates, all that stuff. And she looks over at my plate and says, Iowa. You get really excited. You're like, oh, someone says Iowa or someone says Wisconsin. You're like, oh, they're going to give me that story where they ask me where I'm from in Wisconsin and or Iowa in my case. And then we start talking about who we know. And then we do the whole 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing, and you usually find someone from somewhere because everything's so small in our rural states. And so I'm really excited. And she goes, instead of saying, where are you from in Iowa? She says, how much does gas cost in Iowa? And I'm like, that's a weird question. It's about the same as it is here. It's gone up 6 cents since yesterday here. And I'm like, okay, that's good to know. I'm sorry. I'm paying an extra buck to fill up my tank. That's a bummer. I didn't know what to say. And I just finished filling up and I'm like, where is this going? And she says, I didn't vote for him. And I'm like, oh God, like, I don't know what to do. I'm sitting there. Okay. Do I have one of those try to be engaging conversations that Lisa Fleshman, a previous guest we had, taught us to interact with Republicans properly and nice and with dignity? Or do I just get in the car and leave? Because I don't want to have a political conversation when I've been driving for, you know, the last 24 hours. And
you don't want to argue with
somebody. I don't want to get in an argument.
The president doesn't manipulate
gas. Yeah. But at the same time, here is a rural resident of Missouri, and there's gas station ladies in Wisconsin. There definitely are. There's lots of them. They've drunk the Kool-Aid of Fox News, of President Trump's false claims on the election, of Ron Johnson's false claims on the election, and all the other stuff like he's putting out there. You've toured your state. You've gotten in these communities where you have a lot of that. How has that gone? How have you worked with and tried to bring those residents along with what you're doing as treasurer, as well as potentially as a senator? And just how do you react and work with them?
When I started campaigning first for state treasurer, my mom said, Sarah, don't forget, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason, more listening and less talking. And I think that's really true when we travel across the state. For me, it is meeting people where they are and listening. And one of the, I think, really great conversations I've been having more and more is people feel left behind, especially across communities in rural Wisconsin. We have seen it just front and center. Like 28% of rural Wisconsin doesn't have access to broadband. They're still drinking dirty waters from their well or whatever, what have you. We have lost over, I think it's 170 rural hospitals since 2005. We've got to get mental health. They oftentimes, like, we don't have psychiatrists locally, so they've got to drive at least an hour to get that. That's one of the reasons why we have the highest suicide rates actually in rural Wisconsin. And so it's having these types of conversations and saying, you just saw, for example, we were talking about the American Rescue Plan. And that's where folks saw $1,400 checks in their pockets, their favorite pubs, their local auto, like auto mechanic shop, got the money they needed to keep their doors open. And so I think one of the things that when I travel across the state is, of course, listening, but talking about the results that you see. For example, when you elect Democrats, it's not just talking the talk, it's walking the walk. And I think that's something that's really important.
Walking the walk, that's so important. You know, as a citizen, you encountered a problem. You worked to protect the state's treasurer's position, and then you ran for office to fill that role, which you won because you had walked the walk. And it sounds like you're continuing to walk the walk as treasurer. I know both Kellen and Jacob have questions about some of the programs you have implemented that actually benefit walking the walk, benefit rural communities in Wisconsin. Kellen, let's start with you.
So you were mentioning rural Wisconsin, some of the unique problems facing those areas. We have a very fond connection to New Glarus, being a rural town in Wisconsin for perhaps obvious reasons.
Beer, everybody, beer. Yeah. They have really good beer.
I should be drinking a Spotted Cow right now while I'm talking.
I know, we all just ran in here. We usually have beers with us, and we all just like came in and started recording real quick.
It's also cheese and bacon, but nonetheless, I also love Ashland. They have this fantastic annual cross-country ski event, but this is, we can talk about how awesome Wisconsin is and open up our tourist bureau some other time. But New Glarus and Ashland are small towns in Wisconsin. They're rural areas. Yep. You have some background in local community investment. And can you talk a little bit about how your state has been tackling infrastructure and some other problems in these small rural Wisconsin communities, especially as it relates to investment and access to capital, those sorts of things?
Ken, I will tell you, it's probably one of the best parts of my job. So I chair a $1.2 billion trust fund. And part of that, my responsibility is making sure we invest that. And we have a unique program that's called the State Trust Fund Loan Program, which we provide low interest loans to communities across Wisconsin. And we are one of the only states that has this program. And when COVID hit and we saw revenues were down and expenditures were up across our state, one of the things that in talking with, for example, county and municipal treasurers is they said, look, we're struggling as we worry about how we're going to fund some of these infrastructure projects in our community, because unlike Milwaukee or Madison, we just can't go to the bond market and ask for people to invest in us. Like, we just don't have that capability. We don't have that kind of capital in the way that we're operating. And so what we did is we helped step up and finance projects across the state, whether it was actually with broadband, to fix in a town hall, to even firefighter, like a fire station or fire trucks, police trucks, all of these essential services that are really critical to make sure they had what they needed. And so that was something that we stepped up and really worked hard on over COVID, and we will continue to do and have a legacy of doing.
And one other piece I wanted to make sure to ask you about. You just wrapped up a retirement task force with Governor Evers. It looks like a task force, or it's described as a task force aimed at creating investment opportunities and raising awareness about retirement strategies. And you ultimately land on these five recommendations that you presented a few months back in February. And you can talk about any or all of them if you'd like, but one in particular really stuck with me as I was reading up in preparation for this. As a data scientist for GoDaddy, directly involved in a project looking at impacts of e-commerce on economic outcomes, you have on your list of recommendations there an interactive e-commerce portal. And I was curious about that part of the recommendation. If you could maybe tell us a little bit about that or the broader retirement task force.
One thing I was shocked about when I started this work was how little we actually knew about this crisis. Here in the state of Wisconsin, if we don't do anything, if we just allow the current system to continue, we will see over 400,000 seniors in poverty by 2030. That's a lot. That's your neighbor, that's your friend, and that's going to cost the state over $3 billion. So not only is the right thing to do for Wisconsinites, it's also the right thing to do when we talk about fiscal responsibility, because $3 billion in additional expenses is significant. And what we worked on, Colin, was really thinking through what are some solutions that are pretty pragmatic that will have a significant return on investment. Now, one of the lowest hanging fruits in what we heard across the state is how there are all of these retirement resources, but they're piecemeal. Like, you have to go to one place to find an employer plan. And as an employee, you have to go to another place to find out information about a plan. And you're not sure how much to save or how to navigate it. And that kind of portal recommendation is to provide a one-stop shop where whether you are someone who is looking for a retirement plan to an employer who wants to provide a retirement plan, you can get that information in one place. Because what we heard from small business owners is that it was a real struggle. They didn't know where to go or how to navigate it, to employees saying that they just didn't know what their best options were. And so how can we empower Wisconsinites to start saving just through peer information and access through the internet? But I would say, Kelly, my favorite recommendation from that report is 401 kids. And really how that recommendation started is we're talking with folks across the state, and this one woman I'll never forget, she was in her late 60s. She's at this listening session, and I asked her, like, why are you here? And she said, Sarah, I'm actually not here for myself. I have retirement. I'm here for my three children who are in their 30s. One works for themselves and hasn't started saving. Another one works for a small business and they don't offer retirement. And then the third one works in the gig economy between, like, they were in a band and an Uber driver. And so they just really didn't have the ability to save. And she said, I'm really worried about what their future is going to look like because they're missing out. And so what 401 Kids is proposing is the day a Wisconsinite is born, we would open up a retirement account for them. And they would really benefit from compound interest. So if you think about it, we put $500 in that account. You do nothing until the age of 65. Just on the basic rate of return for a retirement account, it'd be worth over $45,000. Like, that's by doing nothing. Right. Think about how that could address the wealth gap, for example. That was something else that we were excited and trying to be innovative about and thinking about how to address the wealth gap with regards to retirement security.
Thinking outside the box.
Yeah, for sure.
Trying to shake it up a little bit.
Yeah. Sarah, one thing I wanted to ask you about was I was actually reading an article just the other day that was talking about the fact that one of the leading reasons that home ownership is in such decline in the United States is because, well, wages in general just haven't kept up with the cost of living. And so you have an entire group of people that are largely excluded from the homeowner because they can't come up with the down payment or they can't afford the bank terms. And you would have thought that as a country, our banking industry would have learned its lesson back in 2007, 2008, that area. But obviously it didn't. We don't have quite as much predatory lending. Having recently just bought another house myself, going through that red tape process definitely makes it a lot more difficult. And I know that you are part of a process in Wisconsin called Take Root Wisconsin. Can you tell us a little bit about that program and what it does?
Yeah, I'm really proud of actually that work. It came out of my home ownership task force because we were trying to think about how building wealth, a key part of that is owning a home. So the average American, 90% of their wealth is within their home. When you think about it, it's a great investment because it appreciates 3-4% every year. You invest in your community. It's just a really good opportunity to build wealth. And so in Wisconsin, we were below the national average for first-time home buying, and we're the third worst state for Black Americans to own a home. And so we've got a lot of work to do. So to your point, Jacob, what we were trying to think through is how can we provide that? And so by bringing a bunch of home experts together, lenders, social service agencies, realtors, title companies, and even local treasurers, because believe it or not, they play a unique role in this with your property taxes. I'm a lot of things, a lot of people after the Great Recession of 08 and 09, we're dealing with property tax foreclosure, and there are almost no tools to help people navigate that. And so what Take Root Wisconsin is doing is, whether it is looking at how to help people buy a home through credit counseling, we know a lot of times student debt, and we can refinance it, or looking at how to just better budget can get them on a track to qualifying for a loan, or helping with a down payment, providing grants to do that, to staying in their home. We literally developed a foreclosure prevention process that identified people that are at risk of foreclosure and leveraging the equity in their home to actually stay in their home, to fixing their homes. I don't know what it is in Iowa, but our housing stock is pretty old and needs a lot of TLC. And so fixing homes is another part of it, because they have lead paint, they have lead pipes still, their roofs are falling apart. And so even if you would buy an older home, you simply can't even pay the utility bills, because to heat or cool that home, they just don't have the insulation, you name it. And so how can we even be providing grants or trusted contractors to get the work done, so these homes are not only livable, but affordable at the same time, is all part of the takeaway that we just launched last week with Take Root Wisconsin.
I can tell you that what I know of, Iowa doesn't have anything that comes close to that. I know that there's some of the local economic development association, different grant and loan programs for that kind of stuff. And I think you can get things through USDA, but to my knowledge, the state of Iowa does not have anything. If there's listeners out there that can correct us on that, comment when we put this up and point us in that direction. But one of the things that I really wanted to emphasize on what you said is that, and this is speaking more to those conservative listeners that we know we have, we usually have the argument that this is just more government handout. What you just described to me isn't that. A lot of this is more designed in giving people the tools and resources to be able to do these things themselves, as opposed to just throwing money at a problem to try and fix it.
Well, and I would just take that one step further, Jacob. Take Root Wisconsin, we actually developed outside of government. And I convened the task force, and we actually built a consortium outside of government, because we didn't want to rely on tax dollars. So all of this work is actually happening just through leveraging resources and grants and partnerships. It's just being smarter about how we use our funding to really make a difference. But right now, we're not actually taking any taxpayer dollars to do all of this.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I want to transition now then, because you're kicking ass and taking names in Wisconsin as a state employee working on behalf of the people of Wisconsin. Now you have your sights set higher, representing the people of Wisconsin, but on a national level as a U.S. Senator. By the way, it is Pride Month. I just got to give a shout out to Tammy Baldwin, our very first open LGBTQ+ member of Congress, period, in the House first and then in the Senate later. A big shout out to your junior senator from the state of Wisconsin. But if you win this election in a year and a half, what are your goals? What are you looking to do at the national level, partnering with other senators to change our country, to make it better for all U.S. citizens, for all of our rural listeners outside of Wisconsin even?
For me, it all comes down to economic security. We know that is at the heart of what people are looking for in order to have an opportunity and raise a family and have a quality of life. Wisconsin was number one in farm bankruptcies. We have one of the lowest personal income growths. We saw 40% of our child care centers shut down during the pandemic. There are real challenges. We just talked about it too. We have lower than national averages with home ownership, with first time home buyers and young families. And so this is really keeping people up at night. They feel like they're working harder, but yet they're not getting anything for it, because they've got stagnant wages and they've got this crazy student debt, or they're trying to find a good job with healthcare and retirement savings and they just can't find it. And that all comes down to, we need to really make sure that we have a system that works for everybody. And we know right now that's just not happening. Something I've talked a lot about after the pandemic is the struggles that even working moms were facing. Like, they were the teacher, they were raising their kids, they were giving up their jobs because they just simply had no other option. And so what if we actually had a system that had paid family leave or free pre-K or affordable childcare. I just think that would make a world of difference. And I will say the other big thing that I hear a lot in Wisconsin is, what's the future of the jobs? Because right now in our state, manufacturing is a critical component, but yet we're making the combustion engine. That's what our manufacturing companies are doing. They want a partner who can help them transition to a clean energy economy, but they need someone to help them do that. And right now, between job training and the supply chain, like, they don't feel that they can make that transition themselves. It's not that they don't want to. They want someone to work with them to help them do that. And that is an important job sector for our state. So I think it all boils down to these kitchen table economic issues that keep people up at night, that you talk about around the dinner table, that will make life better.
Sarah, that all sounds absolutely fantastic. And we normally let you off easy and say, wow, let's wrap it up. Thank you so much for being here, blah, blah, blah. But that's not who we are. We like asking the tough questions. And actually, the tough questions are usually in the form of icebreaker type stuff from Kellen. So Kellen, take it away. What do you got?
I'll give you the option. So we did this with a guest a couple episodes ago, but we can play Two Truths and a Lie. Or alternatively, tell us something voters might want to know about you that they can't find in the Journal Sentinel or somewhere else.
Oh, I think we should do Two Truths and a Lie. I like games.
Oh, nice. Oh, good. That's a fun one.
I grew up in like a game playing family. So we've got to like end with some sort of game.
Yeah, nice. Absolutely. Nice.
Well, go ahead. Two Truths and a Lie. Sarah Godlewski. Okay. Candidate for U.S. Senate. We're going to see how good of a liar she is. Is this a prerequisite for running for office? I don't know. We'll find out.
I know. I guess this is like, maybe I'm in the danger territory. I have to think for 2 seconds.
Paper.
Okay. Yeah, for our listeners, Sarah is one of the most organized people I've ever met in my entire. It's like it gives you a headache just watching her brain work and like taking note. Like it's, yeah, incredibly organized. Go ahead. Sorry.
All right. I have driven to the Arctic Circle. I have pushed Jimmy Carter. I have hiked Machu Picchu.
Because he's in a
wheelchair? Yeah. Pushing, like, okay. And hiked Machu Picchu. Mm-hmm.
Those are all really good.
They are. Can you drive to the Arctic? To the
like a snowmobile, I guess.
Okay, interesting. Or like a
Arctic problem. Yeah, I guess so.
These okay, are good. Jacob, you get to go first to this time. Do you think, which one do you think is the lie?
I'm going to go with the Arctic Circle.
The Arctic Circle? Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Machu Picchu.
I am too, because the Arctic Circle is so way out there. Like, how do you make that one up?
My reasoning is it's the last one. So she thought about the two truths.
And then with Machu Picchu. Yeah. Yeah. And then with our previous guest, Lauren Hubbard, who's running for House against Devin Nunes down in California, he chose, what was it? Zip lining in Costa Rica. So this sort of feels like that same sort of feel to it.
That was his lie.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to go Machu Picchu as well. What do we got, Sarah?
I mean, I have not hiked Machu Picchu. You guys are.
Yes. Finally, I got one. Wait, tell us about the Arctic. What? How do you drive to the, what? How does that work?
So my parents were public school teachers growing up as a kid, and they would plan these crazy month-long camping trips all over the country. So another kind of truth could have been I've been to all 50 states. And my dad, we drove up to the Arctic Circle one summer. And it was the craziest thing because they don't have normal blacktop highways because of the permafrost. So they're basically like gravel roads. And so we were in our fam van and we would see a bunch of cars always with garbage bags over their windows. And we really didn't understand why as we were slowly making our way up the kind of end of the world highway or whatever it was called. And all of a sudden, a big truck drove by us on the other side, going the opposite direction. And it was like our car was being attacked because they picked up so much gravel and it broke a window. And now we totally understood what the carpet meant on the window. But yes, there is a family photo of all of us smiling in front of the Arctic Circle. And yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Get in the car, kids. We're going to the Arctic.
And no, we are not there yet.
And get in your car, everybody else, our listeners, and go to Wisconsin. As much as I hate to admit it, Wisconsin is one of the best destination tourist outdoor recreation states in the country. They got Door County. You got all the northern forests up north. Great kayaking and canoe. It's ridiculous. The Driftless region down in the southeastern part of the state, it's all just absolutely incredible, a part of our country. And very few people really know how beautiful it is. Go to Wisconsin, people.
I don't know about them Packers or Brewers.
Yeah, we don't get into the sports. How are you? Are you guys still in it? I believe you are. As of this recording, the Bucks. Are still they're still competing.
The Bucks are still hanging on. We might go all the way.
That would be big. You're due. It's taken a couple of runs at it and hasn't quite worked out.
Yeah, and we've had a rough football kind of go, as you all know, the last couple of the last month in particular.
Rodgers to the Broncos. Rodgers to the Broncos. I've just been saying it in my head, my mantra. Yeah, Sarah has her fingers in her ears. Yeah.
I just wanted one more Roger year. I was really hoping for it.
So as a lot of Packers fans like to say, are you an owner, since you can actually have ownership and stake in the Green Bay Packers?
I am. I actually have 2 shares.
Oh, of course you are.
Packers. Right. Now, and it's actually a funny story. Nice. So I literally took the day off from work when the shares went on sale because they pitched it as limited supply. And so literally I was sitting on my computer the minute that it hit, and I was just trying to buy, and luckily I got a share, and another share was gifted to me. So I feel pretty, pretty lucky. So I'm an NFL owner.
That's awesome.
Sarah Godlewski, NFL owner, sort of, current treasurer of the great state of Wisconsin, candidate for U.S. Senate. Thank you so much for being on our show today, and best wishes with your campaign.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I look forward to getting together soon. And next time I owe you cheese curds and spotted cow.
There it is.
Perfect. We'll bring tenderloins and corn on the cob, and we'll make it a fun picnic.
I love it.
Love it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Well, that wraps up this episode and season 2 of 3 Rural White Guys. We are going to take a short break to reevaluate and strategize a little bit. We are thinking about going a little different direction with the show to better connect with you, our listener, and walk with you as you work to make your rural communities even better places to live. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.